Hey everyone, welcome back to the next stage. I hope everyone out there is having a great day and enjoying life as much as you can at this crazy time. This week, me and Tyler, we're super excited to have on John Hornbeck. It was awesome to have John Hornbeck on the show to hear his story. We've known about John Hornbeck through racing and through just being around that atmosphere and that community. But little did we know about how complex his story and how deep it really went. I really love this podcast. I felt like if you're an entrepreneur or someone who just, you know, believes in themselves and know they can make it, you want to listen to this podcast. Or even if you don't believe in yourself, you need to listen to this podcast because it shows you can truly do what you set your mind to. I hope you guys enjoy. All right. Welcome to the show, John. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me. You know, always a pleasure. Anything you guys need.
This has been awesome. I've really been looking forward to having you on the show and yeah, just hearing what you've been up to, what's been going on, you know, how you been, first of all, what have you been up to now?
I'm good, man. I mean, obviously everything going on right now in the world, you know, just adapting, but fortunately for me, everything has kind of not been disrupted too much, other than obviously all of the Spandex Stampede events have basically come to a halt as of now. But everything with Monster and everything we're doing over there on the digital side, and you know, working with you guys at, you know, like yourself, TJ, as an athlete, like we're still full steam ahead. So it's been good. It's just, you know, adjusting, you know, riding my bike, you know, working out, and just, you know, trying to come out of this, you know, ahead and not behind.
That's awesome, man.
I think anyone who can come out of this without having lost anything is going to be majorly ahead, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, definitely interesting times, but, you know, just trying to keep busy and keep positive over here.
So your role with Monster, like, you're the athlete liaison, correct?
Yeah, it's a little bit of – it's interesting as far as, like, when I first came on Monster, obviously I work on the Hydro brand, and, you know, I was doing digital, but working for the brand and then, you know, also helping with the cycling-based athletes. And now I primarily work on the digital as far as the content, you know, social marketing, and obviously still work with our cycling-based athletes like TJ, for example. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a, you know, a few different hats, but, you know, all good. And, yeah, so that's kind of the role over there right now.
So my question would be then, you obviously, like a lot of athletes, and this is like you're gonna be able to tell a lot from like how this like whole pandemic has progressed with your athletes and like not having to go out and do their events. Like how important has it been like to just like make sure their content is up to par, and like how much do you feel like you've lost your return on your athletes, or do you feel like the athletes with like good content have been able to like exceed their value during this period?
You know, it kind of goes both ways. Obviously, you know, a lot of our athletes are, you know, our athletes do events, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever types of events those are, that's kind of, you know, what they do for us. But, you know, obviously events are on a hold right now. And, you know, fortunately we don't have a huge roster right now within the space. So it's pretty easy to keep tabs on, you know, on our athletes. And, you know, when we, you know, first look to partner with, you know, such riders, you know, TJ, for example, you know, we kind of know already what we're getting ourselves into. So obviously, like, you know, something like this came up, you know, obviously it's a little more heavy on the content. You know, we were doing like that Crush Quarantine campaign for a while at the beginning. And, you know, we really, you know, put the ask out to our athletes to, you know, come through with the content that we'd like to see. And yeah, you know, everyone came through great. You know, like I said, we don't have a huge, you know, roster to manage, but, it's been good, because it's also been interesting, because you kind of see a different side of some people when you're, you know, not just so used to looking for results. You know, you're looking at like, hey, like, how are they working in a digital aspect? You know, how are they, you know, working with us as far as if we need this or need that? And it's been great. So It's been interesting, a little different, but, you know, there's nothing bad I can say about it. It's been awesome. Yeah,
it's the times.
It definitely,
it's kind of fast tracking us, honestly. We've, you know, I've already heard people talking about how, you know, yeah, contracts, you know, possibly could change, you know, and not just with us, but I'm just saying, like, it's in a broader spectrum, because, you know, anything like this could happen. So, you know, companies are looking to pivot a little differently for future, as far as like, you know, hey, maybe we are looking at people to do X, Y, and Z other than just solely this, because you never know when this can happen again.
Right. Yeah.
It's definitely pushed athletes. And I mean, I feel like it's this year has been great to push everyone. I mean, you've had the people that see it like yourself and me and Tyler as an opportunistic year to grow and, you know, kind of push forward and not just, you know, you have so much time on your hands now that it's like, okay, we can either sit around and complain or, you know, I drew a lot of inspiration off of you, honestly. That, again, that's why I was excited to have you on the podcast because we've only discussed you working for Monster right now, but your background is so diverse and so incredible that I feel like you are made for this type of year and this made for this type of like evolving, you know, you started, we would love to hear kind of your background and story, but you started in motocross, you raced road cycling, you then started your own brand with Spandex Stampede. And you run events, you run, you know, clothing through that, you do other such things. You also have your podcast and you work with Monster. And as you know, I follow you and keep tabs on you and you're now just slaying it on the enduro mountain bike.
Yeah, that's like the caveat of all of this is just enduro bike's been super fun lately.
But I mean, I don't know how long I went on for that there, just describing kind of what you, so can you please like, take us back to your motocross days or
I can kind of try to cliff note this without dragging on for too long, but you know, obviously grew up, you know, my dad was a motocross, you know, mainly actually he was a desert racer, you know, and a good one then, and so obviously I was on a dirt bike when, you know, I was 2 or 3 years old, and you know, grew up with, you know, I think in also kind of foreshadowing, my dad's been a business owner his whole life, so I've been around that lifestyle. But yeah, you know, we got into moto pretty heavy pretty early, and that was the dream, like anyone else, you know, like, hey, I want to make this happen. So we hit it hard, and you know, the full commitment of, you know, traveling the country, you know, living in the motorhome half the year, you know, I got pulled out of school after middle school, you know, to be homeschooled, so I, you know, I didn't do the whole high school thing, and
to just focus on racing.
Yeah, just racing. I mean obviously I still graduated, my, you know, I got my diploma and all that stuff, but yeah, I never, eighth grade was the last time I was in a classroom. And, you know, we just went racing. So, yeah, you know, that was my life for when I was like 3 or 4. We really got serious when I was about 10. And, you know, that we just put everything into it, you know, like trainers, you know, the motorhomes, the bikes is, I mean, looking back on it, it's insane the money that was spent on that. But, you know, it was a good learning experience as far as like, you know, my dad was super cool. I was never one of like the phenom rider or anything like that, but my dad supported me, and I felt like, you know, he was just basically like, hey, if you work hard and you don't, you know, mess around or screw around, I'll support you till we can't do this anymore. And you know, even with my injuries, you know, that I was unfortunate to crash quite a bit in moto, and you know, shit, by the time I was 17 I had, you know, broken both bones in my wrist, 6 concussions, you know, 6 ribs, 2 punctured lungs, collapsed lung, lacerated my liver in half, broken foot, ankle, torn rotator cuff, shoulder, 2 helicopter life flights. You know, when I did my liver, I almost didn't make out of that one when I was 14. So a lot of up and down, you know, each collarbone twice. And then, yeah, it was kind of just, you know, fast track to 2008, just through like a series of, you know, unfortunate events, you know, with the economy going down, that sport got hurt. My dad's business, unfortunately, went under at the time. So that kind of basically just put the stop on everything we were doing. Because I mean, I hate to say, he basically, you know, lost a lot with that. And, you know, I wasn't one of those riders that was like, oh, I lost, you know, I had support through Suzuki at the time, and they basically damn near went under as well. So we lost all that. And it was just something we couldn't keep going at on our own. So, that was right when I was 18 at the time. And, we were living in like Inland Empire, like Temecula area. And my dad was like, all right, well, you know, we're done racing. I'm going to go back to LA to figure out his business stuff. And I was like, well, I don't want to go to LA. I'm going to stay out here. And, yeah, I just like lived on couches for a while. I got my first job, just some basic minimum wage, like baseball pool boy job. And, it was super ironic though, because like that last like probably 4 to 6 months of racing is when I was starting to go after my pro license. And I got a new trainer at the time, and he got me on a road bike. And that's kind of where that transition happened, as far as like, we were just do basic like recovery spins like once or twice a week. But I actually like kind of liked it. Like, I was always kind of the guy before, like, I don't need to ride a bicycle. Like, I do enough already. I just thought I was the guy that was like, oh, you're going to wear spandex on my bike? That's just super lame. I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just like a kid at the time, which is hilarious to think about now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got on a bike, and my coach was like, yeah, you're kind of a natural. And I was like, oh, whatever, it's cool. And so basically, the fast forward when I had to quit, he was like, hey, you should try cycling. You seem good. And I'm like, no way, because I just spent, you know, 14 years chasing this dream. Wow. And it didn't work. And I'm not going to go do something else from the, you know, I already knew I was getting older, like, for any sport. So I was like, no. So yeah, that, like, that year and a half, I just kind of, you know, was doing what any kid would do at that age, living with roommates, you know, doing stuff I shouldn't have been doing, and definitely wasn't an ideal time. But every now and then I would go back and ride with my coach. I mean, I didn't have a bike at the time. I'd ride his wife's bike, and we would just kind of catch up, and it was kind of cool. And
who was your coach? Yeah,
his name was Casey Johnson. So he was a, you know, former badass professional motocross racer. Yeah, so I would just kind of check in with him, and so finally, like, someone told me, you know, hey, you should try cycling, this and that, blah, blah. And I think the first race I did was like 2010 Boulevard, and it like snowed, and I was wearing a jersey, and it just sucked. And I got dropped. I was like, this is terrible. Like, no way, I'm done. Like, this is, I got, you know, I was going into it like, oh, like, you're really good, and thinking it was like the beginner class, but it was like Cat 5, obviously, and like, people have pedaled longer than 2 months, and I got creamed. So that sucked. And then someone convinced me to go to Valley of the Sun the next weekend or the 2 weeks after that. And I got like almost dead last in the time trial, because I was like, not a time trial guy. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just on like some heavy bike, you know, and Valley of the Sun is like 14 miles of flat.
Right.
I got almost dead last in Cat 5. So we actually, that's funny, that night we went out, I stayed with my buddies, and I was like, we're definitely, I'm not doing this anymore. I was, you know, 20 years old or something. And we went out, and I mean, honestly, we went out and partied and had fun. And I wasn't going to race the next day. And then my buddy was like, no, dude, you should race. I'm like, I don't care. And it was like Cat 5. It was like 7:30 in the morning. I'm like, dude, it's like, you know, it's like 1. Like, we're not going. And he's like, no, let's go. So we actually drove his truck and slept in his truck at the race, because it's in the middle of nowhere, if you guys have been to it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, all right, whatever. So we woke up, and I did the race, and it was like 2 laps around that whatever. And I kind of just rode away at the end, and I won the road race. So shocker. I was like, oh wow, okay, this is kind of cool now. Like, I'm kind of back. You know, obviously I like was 20, so, you know, hangover wasn't really affecting me at all then. But I was so excited. We went out again that night and just did the same thing, and I missed the crit the next day because we were just like up all night again. But so that kind of got the ball rolling as far as like racing. And then you know, I was just like, all right, I had nothing going on in my life at the time. So I was like, oh, it's kind of a good goal, I guess, to try to move up the categories. And everyone's like, it's hard to go from like a 5 to a 1. And so by the end of the year, I managed to get up to a 1.
Wow.
But, like, it's funny, like, parallel moment, and this kind of like predates spandex stampede events, is when I started like the Halloween Horny Fest parties. That was the same year.
That's right. That's, I forgot about those.
Yeah. So that's how I learned my event stuff. Which is another funny, like, you know, my birthday is the day before Halloween, and that's when I was living with my buddies and kind of getting into cycling, and they're like, let's do like a cool birthday party for you. It's Halloween. There was like nothing going on. And I was like, like, I don't want to be like, come to, you know, throw this John Hornbeck birthday. And I was like, that's gay. And I'm, my whole life and my dad, like, our nickname's always been Horny, just for Hornbeck. I don't know how that came about, but I was stuck with that name. So my buddy was like, dude, let's call it like Halloween Horny Fest. I have a house party. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And this was like the MySpace days. We put an event out and an invite out online. And we had this house party. We like cleared everything out. I brought a DJ in. We got like the whole like painter's tape for carpet so the carpets wouldn't get messed up. We made this like cool little VIP room and like the master bedroom with like, you know, a couch and all these fun, you know, whatever. And it was just a cool party, like no issues. And then like the next year, so like that happened, and that's why when I got into cycling. So it's funny how those two things happened, because obviously that would actually fund my cycling for a couple of years. But so the next year everyone was like, hey, are you guys going to do Horny Fest again? And I was like, no, like I live in an apartment now, you know, I don't have the means for that. And, you know, at the, like a week before, my buddy lived in wine country and he's like, dude, like we use our house for weddings in the backyard. He's like, my parents said if we keep it outside, it's cool. I'm like, all right, dude, like fire it up. Let's go. And same thing, you know, brought a couple DJs in, did the lights and all this backyard cool stuff. And it went off. I mean, we probably had close to 500 people there. And
you charged?
Like, so that was just still open, wide open. That was my 21st birthday. And it was just wild. I was like, I can't believe this many people came. And it was like Halloween. So like we somehow slid under the radar of getting busted. Like I remember the cops came at like 5 a.m. or something and we were still up. And by that point, there was like 15 of us here. And they're like, hey, we heard there was a party. And we're like, yeah, it's gone. Everything's good. And they're like, all right, cool. Have a good time. And we're like, man, I can't believe we pulled that off. So, but yeah, like, so that kind of started the event stuff for me. And then the next year I went and I was like, okay, I can maybe do something with this because there's like this need for it and people were asking. So I went to my first venue and I was like, hey, like, I want to book this for this party thing I'm doing. And, you know, I was like 22-year-old kid at the time. So they kind of laughed at me. And I'm like, they're like, how many people do you think you're going to bring? I'm like, oh, I had like 500 last year. So they're like, oh, okay. And, you know, I basically got to borrow money from a buddy. I think it was like $1,000 to rent it. And I was like, yeah, I'll charge and I'll keep the dorm money. You guys can make your bar sales. So then I was like, how am I going to get people to come pay for an event? They've always gone for free. So I figured, all right, like I'll charge guys $10 and girls will be free. So obviously if the girls are going to be there, the guys will pay. And yeah, that went really well. We had like 750 people show and it was,
oh my gosh, yeah, dude.
It was insane. Cause like,
you're like a movie.
Yeah,
it was like when I started working for Spies doing events, we had the bus out there and it was funny because like that Halloween was like back when like the Rays were really kicking off, so there was something going on, so we couldn't do it on Halloween, so I pushed it back 2 weeks in November and I called it Horny Fest Blackout and I was like, you gotta wear black to get in. So it was just like a real nice alien all wearing black. It's just kind of a cool vibe, so I wanted to keep it themed. And they didn't really expect that I'd turn bring that many people, which I didn't either. And so they gave us like one security guard, one bartender, and it was chaos. Like people were getting behind the bar and taking bottles, you know, we had like people passing out because it's just chaos. And the ambulance was there, the cops came, we got shut down at like 10:30. It didn't even make it far because it was just anarchy. And it was, that one kind of put it on the map.
How many people were at that?
Just over 700. So from there, just so I made a little bit of money and then I was like, all right, this is kind of cool. And then that kind of really worked out. And so like the next year I did another venue, we got like 1,000, and the year after that we got like 1,500, and it just kept snowballing. And we can go back to the cycling, but like when I got onto 5-hour energy my first year, it was for zero salary, but I made like, you know, 12 grand at the door on my birthday party. And that was just like, that funded my year, basically living on couches and racing. So yeah, so back to the cycling, but like, yeah, that's funny. Like those two moments kind of happened the same time.
Incredible.
Like cycling and then starting the events. And now that just kind of sprawled off. So, but yeah, cycling, you know, it was just one thing after another, you know, did the first 2 years kind of just on my own. And then I got on that Hoggins Vernon team out of Seattle for like my first elite team, and you know, I was with them for 2 years, and then you know, went to 5-hour and then Hincapie for a couple of years. I mean, that's kind of like the short story long, but like that's that was kind of the path.
That's just I like the parallel, like you said, of like throwing giant parties and then trying to become a pro road cyclist simultaneously. I just think that those aren't two things that you would like associate with one another, so I think that's just like a really neat,
but they
story
are
that,
as well though.
Yeah,
they are,
yeah,
as well, though. Cycling, cyclists after bike racing? Are you kidding me?
So what do you think was like your trait that made you good at planning these events? Like what do you think that makes you like special at it?
I think then a lot of it was luck with the name, as far as it, mm-hmm. as bad as it sounds. Like,
yeah, sure.
Fest, like it stuck and it was like super fun like the first 2 years, so that kind of set it off. So, and it was like really before a lot of like social, like, you know, I think that was like MySpace days. So there was no Instagram. So there's people didn't see what was going on. They just heard about it. And then, you know, we had these crazy stories coming out of it. I mean, I think from just day one, I was kind of good at like planning stuff and being organized and trying to make the best of it. Like, I mean, even we go to these different venues, I'd come in there like 2 days prior, and I would go buy so much stuff at the store, whether it's lights or hang up stuff. And I'd bring in like all my buddies, and we'd spend hours making this place stacked. And then, you know, luckily all my moto buddies, I was still tight with all of them, and they were all pro at the time. So it was their off season. So they would always go too. And obviously I'm in Temecula, so it's like the bubble for moto. And, you know, obviously those guys are going to it. Everyone wants to go hang out with those guys there, and they're my buddies. So it's just like, it was kind of an accumulation of a lot of good things that added into that. Funny story though, like it did all come crashing down a couple of years later. It wasn't like a storybook ending. Like basically after the 1 year, I did like 1500 people, and I was just like, this is it. Like I was like looking at like, how do I turn into this a festival type or bigger thing? I saw this event. I think it was like, it was somewhere in Europe, and it was super badass. It was basically like this pump track party. It was this guy, he won like 4x, and then it was his after party. So it was like, they did like this pump track, and they did individual, like kind of like timed things, and they had the crowd, and then they finished it like the, you know, exhibition event. And then it was a party. I'm like, dude, I could do that with Hornet Fest. Like I have connections for athletes, and I have the party. I was like, let's actually, cause I was kind of getting bored honestly with the party. Cause at the end of the day, I was kind of just like a promoter.
Mm-hmm.
Like the venue would be like, hey, come do it here. We'll give you a part of the bar. You can take the door. And then by that point, like everyone knew Halloween happens, and you just go, and it was kind of rinse and repeat. And I was like, I actually want to do an event. You know, I love events. And so I saw this, and it looked just awesome. So I was like, okay. And this was still when I had like no money. And, cause I did 5 hour energy for zero salary. And I basically lived off the money I made off the party the year before. And I was working like part time at a bike shop. So then I got my first contract for Hincappy, and it was like $15,000 with my salary. But I was like, all right, cool. I've got that. I'm going to make money off my party. I can just coast for cycling for the year as far as like financial wise.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had this great idea of just switching everything from the Halloween Horny Fest party to, it was called a Horny Fest Pump Track Palooza. And I went, and basically before this, some of the parties were funded really. Like I could get away with like $1,000 and make this happen. But then I was like, okay, I need a big enough venue. So then I went to Pole Position, the go-kart place. I'm like, I want to rent this place. And they're like, okay, this is how much it's going to rent. It was like $8,000. I'm like, that's totally fine. Like, I just didn't have a care in the world. I got 5 credit cards.
Oh my gosh. $8,000
for P2R. And I was like, okay, now I need a pump track. And I found one in Wisconsin, and they drove it out to set it up. So that was like another $7,000. And then they're like, well, we don't serve alcohol here. And I'm like, okay, how do I do that? So then I had to find out how to get an ABC license for on-premise, pay a ton of that. I had to get my business incorporated for liability. And so basically I went into this event with like a $17,000 like overhead.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is totally fine. People are going to pay more. It was like, you know, I went from like $10 to $20. And I was like, but there's like this event. And I was like getting all these athletes. Like I had some sick athletes like moto, BMX, freestyle, racers. And I would literally go to each of their place, and we would film a promo of them like doing their thing. And then I had like the bumpers of Horny Fest, Pump Track, Palooza, like this whole pre like building this thing up. And I did it with every single athlete for them to promote. I think it was maybe early Instagram days. And I was like, oh, this is easy. I got this. It didn't work at the end of the day. And I lost basically everything. Like, I think I had like 200 people show up.
Really?
Because I moved it like right before Christmas, because that was like when I could book everything. So looking back, it was very like obvious why it didn't work. You know, it was, I went from the little bar area in Old Town Temecula where everything's popping to more of an industrial area off the beaten path. So then it was like kind of weird. And then it was not Halloween when there's a reason to go out and party and do stuff. It was before Christmas when everyone's trying to save. And then it was also like, wait, it's at a go-kart place. Do they serve alcohol? It wasn't really clear. And then it was like a little more expensive. So basically it was like one of the worst nights of my life, because I basically was like, oh, cool. I just signed this, my first actual money deal for cycling. And I lost it all in one night already before I even got paid.
Right.
So that put me behind the eight ball. And we bought a Cadillac too, because I was like, it'll be sick, like let's raffle this. So my dad found me a Cadillac for like $1,000. We were driving it out one night, and the transmission went out on the 15 freeway, So then I had to get a tow truck, and I was still just helping. I'm like, this is gonna be awesome. Everyone talk about this. So we like, I had to put a new tranny in it. I was like, another $500 to $1,000. So just keep adding that on the overhead. We spray painted the whole thing, Horny Fest, this and that, decked it out with all the decals. And then I just gave it to a, buddy. He didn't take it. It stayed there. Then it ended up like getting vandalized a week later.
Oh,
it was like so much random crap happened then, but like that is what taught me everything on how to do events from my knowledge, as far as being smart, you know, not getting over your head. You know, there's a reason why all my events now are capped at a certain number. I know exactly what I'm going in with. I know what I need, my budget's going to be. I know what I'm going to make off everything, because it's all like, I'm not going to go back to that spot. So the next year I went back and did a Horny Fest, did a Halloween thing and at a bar, and it was a huge hit again. And then the weekend after was my first Spandex Stampede. And then basically I made more off that, and it was less of a headache. So that was the last year I did Horny Fest. I kept building those Spandex events now.
So talk about how you like rolled all that experience into Spandex Stampede. And then like, for those who aren't familiar with it, like what Spandex Stampede is.
So it started, like, obviously it's an event, bicycle fondo style. And we always had an event like the Temecula Grand Fondo. And I just kind of like would always go to these events and kind of pick them apart and be like, oh, I wish I could do this. Or, I mean, all right, I'd do this better. I would do that. Or, you know, like, especially like, you know, because then I was racing pro. So I was going to a lot of the events in the off seasons as like, you know, like the, you know, one of the guest pro riders. And I just love events. And I was like, I feel like I could do it better, but we already had one. And then, so they kind of pulled the plug because they couldn't afford it, or they lost a sponsor. And so then I went to take it over, and I went to like the city, and I was like, hey, I want to do this. And I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, you can do it. It's going to cost you like $20,000 to rent this place down here or do this and that. And I'm like, no, okay, there's a better way around this. So I went and like talked to all these wineries. I was like, hey, I want to do a cycling event. And I found a new one that just opened. Super cool people. I'm like, here's my concept. You know, I'll start small. Let's be safe. You know, we're going to do 200 people, this and that. Kind of explained it to them. It was at that time, it was a road bike event. It was kind of before the gravel stuff. And it was like a short event, like 50 miles. I wanted to emphasize on the party aspect, as far as like, you know, going back to my roots, as far as like put on parties. Like I didn't want to go to an event and, you know, spend 120 miles and just come back all tired. Like I want to actually, you know, we had this bitch in winery that I wanted to hang out at and drink and, you know, have food and live music and people having laughs. So yeah, that was the concept, you know. It was like 50 miles, you know, we got away. The permitting back then was super easy. It didn't really cost much to get it done, especially because it wasn't a race. And then we came back and it was just super fun. And it was a success. We sold it out with 200 people. And then I think the next year I went straight into the gravel because I was getting all into that. And then, yeah, they just started turning those things out, and we've still kept it like 250 riders. But, you know, obviously up until now we were growing it. You know, we had Big Bear, you know, we had Temecula, we had another spot on, oh, we had Redlands that we canceled obviously this year, and then started doing the camps. But yeah, I think to this point now I've done like 12 Spandex Stampede events, and they've all been good. They've all been profitable, no issues. Wow. So yeah, it's it all kind of goes back to that one pump track party that kind of didn't do too well for me. But I definitely, like, I didn't go to college or anything, but that definitely helped me.
Yeah, it's one of those like
learn fast.
Yeah, you learn exactly. From failure.
Yeah,
learn from failure. When you lose that much money, you're definitely gonna learn something.
Yeah, and for me then I was like, this is my life, I've got nothing, and a Cadillac that's on fire now basically.
Oh,
so yeah, that was a fun time.
You raced pro while you were doing these events, and then because me and Tyler raced pro. We even raced against you. I remember racing against you at Tour of Utah. Explain kind of like that time of your life and also what that meant to you. You know, you explained what kind of your parties and everything meant and everything. But like, were you just using cycling just for, I mean, just pure enjoyment because you had all these other things going on? Or was
yeah,
it,
I mean,
you know?
Honestly, like cycling to me wasn't really anything I planned on. Cycling kind of started as like a thing to do because I had nothing going on at the time in my life when I was like 19 or 20. And then it was finally like something I was seemed decent at. I mean, when I was racing moto, that was my whole life. And it's still, I mean, I still love motocross, but like that's all I wanted to do, was be a pro and live that life. And I didn't make it. Who knows if I would have or not. But I got into cycling and I was actually like a much better cyclist than I was a motocross rider. So that was more so I was doing it because I was chasing that kind of like second opportunity to be a professional. And I said very early on, I was like, because I already knew I was old, and I knew from losing moto that this can be taken away at any time. And obviously you have to have like a backup plan. I didn't go to school. That was one of the reasons why I went into the event stuff. And once I saw that had some potential, I held on to that, because obviously we all know when we can get clipped any time of year and you might not have anything left. And I didn't want to be back in that second position again, like Twilight Zone. I was like in my late 20s. So I was cycling, and from the beginning, I was like, if I keep improving every year and getting a better deal or getting better opportunity, I'll keep going. But the second that stops, I'm done. Because at the end of the day, I don't really want to be a top cyclist. You know, I'm very passionate about like business and marketing stuff, and that's what I found out over the years. But this is still a great opportunity. And so basically, yeah, every year I got better. You know, I got onto the 5-hour team, and even though it was low salary, it was my first pro team. And then I did really well at both. You know, almost won the climber's jersey there my first time. And then like I got to Hincapie, and Hincapie was good. You know, the first year, you know, I was getting paid now, so I was like, all right, career, there's a step up. You know, it was $15,000, but whatever. So then I got that, and then you know I was top 10 at nationals that year, and you know I had some decent, you know, stage results at Utah. So then they signed me again the next year, and you know, I think I doubled to like $30,000 on salary, and it was going well. I did California, you know, did decent there, like 15th or 16th overall, and that basically got my foot in the door with the Aqua Blue team.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was,
oh really?
Yeah, so I haven't really talked about this because this is kind of the
here's the place, my well. Man.
It's interesting because that's the, yeah. I'm the curious next to hear your story.
The place, yeah.
With that, because I was also talking with them probably that same year.
First year they were going pro Connie, and they were doing a small, like they were doing like a one roster team, so like 12 riders. And I had a couple connections through people that they wanted an American, and they saw for like my first time in California, even though I'm a little older, it was decent. So I still have the emails. Like, so I got a verbal deal for next year, and they're like, all right, hey, we'll bring you over. This is what we can get paid, and you can come over here for a 1-year deal. And that was my end goal, is just to get to Europe, because obviously like
you're not going to make it
in the US racing. That's the goal. So I was like, every year I got to improve. So that was cool. So I kind of checked out of everything else, kind of let everyone know like, hey, I've got something else I'm going to do. And, you know, just like typical any cycling story, that was the year that like Tinkoff Neon folded. So it was like an influx of riders in the market. And then in September, it was like, hey, sorry, but we're not going to be able to get you the spot now, maybe next year. And I was like, well, I kind of just axed all my opportunities already. And then I talked to like a couple other continental teams in the US once that went out the window. And they're like, yeah, you know, we can have you a spot. You know, we can't really pay much. And I was just like, all right, well, we're done. Like, this is, I'm not going to keep going after this, because this was the year it went backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I was starting to like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to double down on Spandex Stampede, grow this event business. But then also maybe like I wanted to get into mountain bike racing just for fun. Obviously, I'm not trying to chase that, but like maybe it can help promote my business. But also during that time, backtrack maybe a year, I started writing for Road Bike Action magazine. Because I knew Neil Shirley, and I had like a bit of a web page blog that I was doing race reports, because I was like, all right, well, I'm not a top cyclist, but hopefully if I can kind of start getting some momentum of people following me, like maybe it'll help me. So like I was reaching out to every site or whoever, like, hey, like, do you guys need any help? Can I write for you? I enjoy writing. And I would send them race reports. Sometimes they'd get posted, sometimes they wouldn't. And then Neil was like, hey, like, yeah, we could actually do something in the magazine. And I knew Zap, the editor-in-chief over there. I met him. He's an old moto guy, so there was a good connection there. And so I started writing for them. I did, like, Utah. I did a couple stories on the big races. And then so basically when word got out that I was kind of done, that was the same time Neil left the magazine to go for his new position. And they're like, hey, do you want to just come work here now? Because you're done racing, we kind of need someone to take Neil's spot. And that was just a like really nice slide into there. So I really was fortunate with that. But that's where basically everything came down with cycling and started, I guess, in my working career now.
Oh,
Wow. So it's kind of funny how things line up, but like, yeah. So that's how that happened.
So many different paths. I love it. I love it. And I love how they all, and you've even looked back and seen the correlation and how they, you know, this happened. If this wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't have learned that lesson or this lesson. And it's funny also hearing you just talk about cycling, you know, and how you loved it, but it wasn't like your bread and water, you know, where everyone we've had on the podcast and everything, you basically, you know, we had Keegan on the last episode. And I mean, that guy just eat, drinks and breathes training and riding his bike and racing, you know? And so it's awesome to kind of hear how you can still do these paths, but yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. Cycling for me kind of came out of a spot. Like, I think any cyclist that gets good, everyone's a little different and weird, because obviously you have to basically be on a bike all day by yourself. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely more of an introvert style personality, and I love kind of being on my own thing and stuff. So like, I enjoy just getting out and doing it. But it was just kind of like, I didn't really have anything else going on at the moment, and I didn't want to go to school because I didn't know what I'd go to, and obviously I didn't have the money for any of that. And it was just the next best thing, and I happened to be halfway decent, so it helped. But like, I kind of looked at it as just like a great second chance to obviously be a pro, which was cool, but also like, all right, how can I use this and leverage this to set up for after, you know, whether it's the events or, you know, when I started writing for people or just making those connections for, you know, because nowadays, you know, it's not who you are, it's who you know, and, you know, and kind of set yourself up for later. So yeah, it's really interesting how all that kind of came about. But yeah, it definitely wasn't the typical way. I mean, I didn't do my first race till 20 years old, you know, so it was definitely a little different. And I remember like coming in, like I was the kid with tattoos and the young kid, this and that. And, you know, I was a motor guy and I wasn't really liked it that much at first. So it was a funny beginning, but it worked out.
Yeah, I'd say that's a super like interesting story, actually. I didn't realize there was that much to it.
So then you were riding at Road Bike Action. Where you started then dabbling, I think, right into some gravel, right? You were fifth, right at Dirty Cancer.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, so I was. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, go. No, you, sorry. That's. I was just finishing basically there.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the. Once the gravel kind of started going. I mean, I did my first gravel event, I want to say like 2000. It's like my own gravel event, like 2016. Like, it was still when I was racing. And I mean, obviously, gravel was like the perfect middle ground for me, because, you know, I race moto, so the bike handling skills, but then on the road, so I'm used to the bike and the endurance. And it was just like, that's, I just, you know, kind of like, I see you, TJ, like how you're just all about it. And I fell into that, like, you know, a few years ago, and I was just, this is awesome, you know. So came out of the magazine, but by that point I was pretty like smoked with trying to do anything serious. Like, I think it's tough when guys kind of come out of the sport and try to do both, as far as like, I mean, you guys know, if you're a dedicated cyclist, you really don't have time, and not just so much time, but energy to focus on other stuff, because you're just so tired. So like, when I came out of it, I told them straight up, like, hey, I'm not trying to be like some pro anymore. Like, cause that's what they're like, hey, like, we don't want you to come to work for the magazine and like, you still try to chase results. And it's not, I'm like, no, I don't care anymore. Like, I want to like focus on my career now of work. So you did Kansas and I lucked out. Still had some fitness from the year before, and I finished like seventh or something. But that was definitely like the last any result I had, because obviously more pros came back, and the next year I just got hammered, like smashed. Like, I don't train anymore. I just ride for fun now. But I saw the gravel, you know, segment booming a couple years prior, and you know, a great line I always heard, like some marketing book I read, it was like, you don't want to look at where the puck is, you want to look at where it's going. So I was like, okay, I see something going forward here. So that's when I scrapped all my road bike events. I was like, let's double down on gravel. It's easier to put on, you know, the roads are easier, this and that. And
what year was that?
That was probably 2000. I want to say my first gravel event was like 2016.
Wow.
To put in perspective, the year before, I did two road events before that, and I sold out at 250 riders every time pretty easily. I had 40 people show up to the first gravel event the next one.
Wow.
So it was still super early. No one really had the.
You had to trust it.
Yeah. And I was like, I just really like it. So, and I doubled down on it. And, so yeah, that got me into the gravel stuff, and, I haven't touched the road stuff ever since, but and now I'm doing enduro, so it's all good. We're just doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But yeah, the magazine was great. I was almost at the magazine for almost just under 2 years, and that was a great experience because, you know, when I worked for Zap, super cool guy, he let me, you know, I was working, you know, I was writing stories for the magazine. I was doing the website, you know, and that's, I was doing the social. Yeah, I started their podcast, and, you know, that was a great area to meet a lot of people. And, you know, which ultimately led to me getting hired over at Monster. So, that was just another funny thing on how timing worked, because that was not planned at all either.
Sure.
So, yeah, now talk about that. I mean, that's because then Monster, it seems like, has now dived in, you know.
It's... Yeah, that was – I Go always ahead. Looked at – obviously, I grew up in Moto, so it's all energy drink-based, you know, companies that, on that sport. And I always just thought it would be so cool to have, like, a Monster logo or something on, like, a helmet. But, like, I mean, you guys know energy drinks don't exactly mesh with the cycling – you know, vibe, you know, especially 5 years ago. And one of my events, a friend of mine, Johnny Omara, who is like, he's a legend in Moto, like one of like the top guys, you know, back in the day. And he lives out here and he's just one of the coolest guys ever. But he had a white claw on his jersey because he's all into like cross country racing now. He's a multi-time national masters champion and everything. But I hit him, I'm like, hey, like, what's the white claw? Like, it's like, it's, you know, I'm like, Monster getting into, like, you know, cycling and stuff? And he's like, yeah, yeah, actually, like, my buddy runs, you know, he runs the muscle Monster, and Johnny was a Monster athlete, but he was trying, you know, pushing that brand. And so I sent them an email over at Monster. I got the contact from him. I was like, hey, I'm putting an event on. Like, would you guys be curious? It's in Southern California. It's bicycles, this and that. And then, like, nothing happened. And then I finally got a response like 8 months later, which was so random. I'm like, I don't even know how you found this email. And he was like, yeah, we'd love to support your event. You know, here's some product and this and that. And that opened the conversation of me getting my relationship with Monster. And that was still pre-Hydro days. So, you know, I just became friends with them over there, you know. And, you know, obviously, you know, some of them are into cycling. And so we, you know, kept in touch and they would come to my events. And then, so what ended up happening though was I was going to take a job. Cannondale hit me up to take a job with them as far as doing like content and, you know, going to events and stuff like that. So I actually was doing my resume and I was sending it to them and I hit my contact at Monster. I was like, hey, would you be interested in being a reference for me? And then he's like, oh, I didn't, like, you're going to leave. And I'm like, well, like, there's this opportunity I'm going to check out. And he's like, what is it? And I told him what it was, what I was going to do. And he's like, we kind of need someone like that over here. Like, just come over here. And I'm like, really? And so that was a longer process than just, like, a phone call. But, like, that is what – because that was right when Hydro was starting to come around. And they were getting into these different spaces. And then, you know, I was doing digital stuff for the magazine. And, you know, I kind of knew – the riders and stuff, and I, you know, obviously I know a lot of people at Monster already just from the motocross background, so it's a really good fit. And that's what got me over there. And so, yeah, that was actually, next month will be 2 years now that I've been at Monster, which is crazy. Wow. I think it went by that quick.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so that's how that happened. And just another relationship based like connection that I was fortunate to make, you know, through cycling basically. So that's why I tell everyone that I, like, you know, younger people are like, I used to coach a lot of kids in high school back when I was in Temecula, like, they were high school kids, and it's just, don't burn bridges, make friends, be valuable, do more than you are asked, because you never know what can come back in the future, because it's happened to me so many different times.
Yeah.
So it's quite funny how things work out. And now I'm here, working from my room right now, not going into the office.
That is so cool, man. That is, I mean, I loved how, I mean, even basically answered, like, what would you, you know, advice you'd give to kids right there. I mean, that's solid advice. That's definitely advice I've learned the last few years, you know, just like realizing, oh man, the people you see going up are the same people, or going down, it's the exact same people, you know. And especially in the cycling world, everyone's so connected and you know, basically moving from one area to another area. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, TJ, you're a perfect example of that. I mean, we met,
oh man,
how many years ago at that spider shoot?
We
met each other there, saw a relationship, kept in touch, you know. And when I had this position of like, hey, let's start bringing athletes on. Like, I knew what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, all right, cool. I'm going to call TJ. Like, let's get him on board. And
yeah,
I guarantee that couldn't have happened. Like, we didn't know in this then.
You should talk about, I mean, what you actually, I mean, because like you said, energy drinks are kind of like you said, like looked at weird in cycling. So explain kind of what Monster Hydro, the difference and what Hydro is and, you know, why you're bringing on these different athletes. I mean, Hydro has some of the best, you know, athletes with Keegan Swenson, Amity Rockwell, you know, you know, you got me on board, but
we got Diamond and then we got a couple teams, but yeah, no, it's cool because obviously, like, when you think of an energy drink, you think of just the normal can carbonated, which, you know, within cycling, that's not exactly what people are drinking. But Hydro, on the other hand, is a great formula. It's water based, you know, it does have caffeine, electrolytes, it's got what you need as far as like for, you know, a pick me up, you know, for the end of the race, the end of the race, but it's. The best part is because obviously you'll get people like, oh, you guys put a logo on someone and that's it. But like our athletes actually do use it on it to the point where it's not just our cycling athletes at Monster. Like our moto guys drink it. You know, our other athletes drink it. Like it's a great product and it's cool to have the backing from a company like Monster to make that product to where you can, like, I will talk to anyone and be like, I use it, our athletes use it, and I love it, and it works. Like, it's what I put in my bottles, and it's not just, like, the logo. Like, it's actually the product. So, I mean, when we were at Tour of Utah last year when we sponsored that event, we had riders, you know, I won't say names or teams, but that were in the prologue in the top five using it that have nothing to do with us, but they were getting it through the race, and they were using it. And we have nothing to do with them. And so that was just like a great testament. Like the product works, people are using it. And I mean, you guys know, like cycling is such a tough sport of sponsors coming in, leaving, this and that. So to have like a company that is, you know, so big and amazing, like Monster, to come in and want to do this in that space and, you know, in other spaces, you know, we're in volleyball, you know, we're in gym sports, you know, we're getting into some other sports as well, but like, it's just cool to be part of that.
It brings a good coolness factor to cycling for sure. I think it's smart. It's important to bring like those big kinds of big companies into this sphere. It just makes it lifts the whole sport up.
And it's great because there's actually a lot of people at Monster that are into cycling or do ride bikes. You know, we have our lunch
ride every day.
We did have our lunch ride, you know, when we were in the office, and it's like, it's just a cool new part of it. So it's you know, it's funny because like cycling, I think, does get that kind of like, oh, it's not cool or this and that. And I always used to laugh because like all the moto dudes that are serious or anyone else, like they all jump in spandex and train. But like maybe the guys, your average fan, like, you know, doesn't think that, and they see a cyclist and like, oh, that's, you know, not cool. It's not. It's like, that's probably your hero right there on the side of the road that you just think is like not looking cool right now. So it's funny how it has that kind of like that synergy within it.
Yeah.
It's been in an old school vibe for a while. And I think you guys coming into the sport has really helped revitalize it, you know, bringing in that new look, bringing in the logos on the decals on the helmets. Like, I thought that is the coolest shit ever, man. Like, I love it. I love literally putting on my helmet every day because, I mean, and it just, and it definitely, you get looked at, you know, for sure when you're out on the road or people are riding and, you know, they might not recognize me. I might be in my denim shirt or something, but like they see my helmet and they see that monster that giant claw. And they're like, oh okay. That's sweet.
And it's one thing you can like, I mean, you know, wearing that claw, you know, it has such, you know, I believe it has such status to where it's like, I mean, not to knock at any other sponsor that anyone wears, but like, you can walk into a store and grab that, you know, drink, you know, you see a lot of these companies that sponsor cycling, which, you know, I'm super grateful that they are, because they make us, you know, or, you know, they make the athletes get by and get paychecks. But most of them are just like words that you're just like, what the hell is that company? Or, you know, what is that? Like, I have no idea. It's this and that. Like, I mean, when, you know, you just don't know, but like you see that claw and you're just like, that's pretty sweet. Cause everyone knows that claw. So, you know, there's definitely something to it.
it definitely, I feel like as well, when I'm out on the gravel roads, you know, you'll have people ripping by on their motorcycles or four wheelers or razors. And I mean, it gets you a little bit more respect too, you know, because they're like, oh, all right, you're into that stuff, you know. It, like you said,
yeah, exactly.
It has a look and it has an image. And I mean, like I said, I'm proud to wear it every day. And it's been, I mean, I think it's the coolest, one of the coolest things too that I've done in my career is, you know, signing with Monster, because it's just something as a kid, I grew up snowboarding and loving that vibe. And you always dream of kind of signing with a company like that, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the same, like, how, you know, I always wanted to be a Monster athlete when I raced moto, you know, never at that level, but, I mean, that's just, like, such status to have that claw on your helmet. I would have never thought it would have happened within cycling.
Yeah,
but,
it's blunt.
You know, at least I'm like, all right, well, I got it there, so, like, it's like, you know, a little childhood dream that, you know, you get to wear that.
Yeah, so.
Cool.
John, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you're always looking where the puck is going to go. With Corona, everything you're doing now, you know, one thing that's really impressive is, everyone should go check out his podcast, Spandex Stories, Spandex Stampede Stories. But he did 30 podcasts in 30 days, right?
Yeah, that was, that kind of went off like when I came into the whole Corona time. And, you know, obviously, like, I'm still working full time with Monster, but, you know, I lost, you know, I always like to just, you know, for me, like, having fun is working on stuff, you know, like my events, that's fun for me to work on that, you know? And, you know, I remember some people, like, especially, you know, some prior jobs, they'd be like, oh, like, how do you work on an event but have this full-time job? I'm like, well, I don't have a family. I don't have, you know, kids. Like, this is my free time. I like to do that. That's my fun stuff. So when that got kind of taken away right now, I was like, all right, well, I want to do something different. And, you know, I kind of did that 30-day challenge because when I did that 75-day challenge like a year ago, and it was like, I was always posting about it and people were like kind of keeping up with it and like being interested in it after 2.5 months of doing this challenge. So I was like, oh, that could be a great way to kind of get the podcast up and running. It's like, I'll make a challenge of it. You know, people follow along every day and then I'll have enough content to basically last me for 2 or 3 months if I'm doing a weekly episode. So, you know, I've always wanted to do the podcast with Span Experience. I didn't really realize, know how to do it, because it's like, is it a gravel podcast, is it a cycling podcast, is it a motocross podcast, is it like a business podcast, because, like, you know, it's a business at the end of the day. And then finally I was just like, you know what, it's whatever I want it to be. So, you know, I talked to you on it, you know, I talked to motocross guys on it, I talked to, you know, I just put up the one yesterday with Kristen Meyer from Betty Designs, how she started her company, because I mean, everyone I talked to on it kind of has a connection to where I want to learn something, or I have some type of connection with it, whether it's with you, TJ, I know you from working with you or racing with you, or, you know, we were planning our Catalina trip, or it's Kristen who, she started a clothing brand and I have a clothing brand. It's like, how do I grow it to that? Or it's, you know, a motocross guy who I used to race moto with, you know? So it kind of dovetails into a little bit of everything. And at the end of the day, it's just something I enjoy and it's fun. It's cool. And, you know, hopefully it keeps the brand around in the back of their heads, because when the events come back out, it's like, all right, here we go. It's go time again. So, yeah, as far as like looking where things are going, like right now, everyone's, I believe, just kind of has to double down on digital and, you know, being, you know, relevant and putting out, you know, whether it's content or whatever they're looking to do that is meaningful to the possible consumer or, you know, customer base, because you can only scroll through your social and like so many photos that at the end of the day don't really mean anything. You know, like, I believe that's kind of where you lose some people if you just do just photos, this and that. But if you can, if you're trying to build something, or whether it's, you know, you, or I guess if you want to say your brand, like, it has to be something that people are going to take away and either learn something, enjoy, have a laugh, to where it's like, okay, like, I resonate with this or that. So it's just really, you know, getting creative. And, you know, I mean, exactly what you guys are doing with this podcast. You know, I mean, TJ, you and I have talked about event stuff whenever that stuff comes back up, but mm-hmm. You know, it right now is the digital age. And I mean, especially, I mean, I never thought events were going to go away. I mean, not saying they're gone, but I mean, they'll come back hopefully in some sort of way, and hopefully in a best case scenario we're gonna be back like normal. But that was always like my safeguard, like, oh, events, everyone wants to do stuff. And then we found out right now events are not possible. So how do you use this time to, okay, like, what are people doing? What can I do that's going to be beneficial, you know, to myself and the end consumer? So, you know, and also, like, within cycling, I think, like, cycling's a little behind on a lot of stuff. So if you look at just any other sport genre and how they do it, it's almost like the playbook's already there. So you just take what they're doing and then take it to your area, if you're, especially if you're in cycling, and you just adapt it right there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wow, dude. That was phenomenal. Really, really. Yeah, I think we're going to wrap it up from that. Yeah, John, seriously. Yeah, that hour went by so fast. I think me and Tyler, I loved it. I love just sitting back and hearing what you had to say. And, like, you know, normally people have kind of one path that they take, like, all right, I'm going to go to school, be a lawyer, be a banker, this, or even in cycling. You know, for me, I at 12, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a cyclist, you know, and same kind of like with Tyler, we've just been cycling and we're starting to kind of really branch out. And for me, I'm starting to see that, like what you saw years ago, that, oh, wow, you can still do all these paths, you know, you can still enjoy it. And so I just loved hearing everything, and I hope I learned a ton. I hope everyone else who's listening enjoyed it and loved it, because it was awesome.
And that's, I mean, I think that's one way to also look at it. Like, no one, and I mean, I just kind of made this, I didn't make this realization, but I said it the other day and it kind of like stuck with me. Like, no one knows what the future is going to hold. I mean, I just came out of a relationship, and I remember she said this one thing of like, hey, like, do you see us getting back together? And instead of just saying like a yes or no, I was like, honestly, like, I have no idea. I can't tell the future. Like, I'm very positive. Like, I lean towards, you know, everything happening for the right reasons. And if it happens, it happens. Because when I look back at my last 10 years, I would have never guessed I'd be where I am now, or I'd be down different avenues I am now. But because, yeah, you don't really know what's coming. But if you just kind of like, you know, work towards, you know, something that's worth something and take opportunities, like, doors will open and you never know where you're going to end up. So, like, yeah, as far as like, oh, I'm going to go to school and get this degree and that's my life, it's like those kind of days are out the window, I believe. Or, I mean, maybe there's some there aren't, but, like,
I
my case, it's just like anything, you don't know what's going to come. So, yeah, keep working away, be positive, and, you know, you'll end up in a good spot.
Awesome. Cool. And any, I mean, final thoughts or how we can follow you on social media or.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty basic. Like, I don't have any huge following. I like to be behind the scenes. But, yeah, just my name, Jalen Hornbeck. And then Hispanic Stampede is Hispanic Stampede. And then, yeah, you know, obviously, we want to go for a ride, enduro. TJ, we're going to go to Catalina hopefully soon.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I mean, I'm – yeah, anyone wants to reach out or have a chat or, yeah, go for a ride, I'm always up for it. But
awesome. Cool, man. Awesome. Thanks so much, John. Yeah, thanks for
coming on. It was a great story.
Yeah, thanks, man. Much appreciated. Like, yeah, I'm not used to the one to kind of being on the other end of this kind of stuff. So it's definitely.
It was fun to hear, man. It was fun to hear. Awesome, John. Well, you have a great day, dude.
All right, man. You guys see you. And, yeah, we'll speak soon.
All right, take it easy, man.
Catch you later.
All right. Bye. See you later.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, here we go. Wow, that was an amazing episode. Tyler, what were your thoughts, man?
Well, I thought it was, I think the biggest lesson that you could learn from that was you learn from your mistakes. Obviously, he's done a lot of things and made good connections over his career, and I mean, I liked the party lifestyle turning into a cycling, you know. I think it's
cycling then business.
It's business, and I think but I also drew a lot of parallels with what Justin's trying to do with Legion as far as making it like an experience, the team and experience, rather than, you know, just a cycling team. I think John has kind of been doing the same thing with his stuff. So I liked, it was interesting.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really incredible. I loved what he had to say. I loved his, you know, his advice. And it's really inspiring, you know, hearing his stories, because you can realize, oh, man, a lot of times you think when you're coming out of one, you know, part time of your life, whether it be like racing or doing this job or that job, you know, it's like you're nervous going into the next. And here you have someone who's done that like 10 times, you know, like just dived in, and is, you can see that. And it's like you said, if as long as you just put your, you know, work hard and give it your all, it doesn't matter if you're the most talented or whatever, you can still be successful in it. And I thought that was really awesome. And, you know, it's really awesome to see, like, again, someone no business or background or no, like, educationally wise and, you know, super successful, you know, and works for a big giant corporation and runs his own business and does a bunch of other stuff. So it was really cool to hear and inspire. So I loved it. Hope everyone else loves it too.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
all right, dude. Let's, there's not much going on, you know, to really tell everyone, but what do you kind of have for us, or what's going on with Legion or anything?
Legion, nothing really new, you know, we're just, it's all building toward 2021.
Okay. So you're not no racing this year.
No. Yeah. Season's finished. Season never started, but
because I mean, I also saw that racing is starting up this week with Velta Burgos and what do you got, Strada Bianchi this weekend?
Yeah, but America is not
gone.
So, so no racing. So we're just working on getting ready for 21. The training is kind of focused more towards 21 as well now. So, yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. It's gonna be a long winter. It's gonna be two long winters for me now.
Yeah.
But you know, there's more hardships. That's a first world problem. So we'll be all right.
Exactly. Exactly. What have you, how have you kind of switched dials in your training, or, like, what are you doing now? Cause I mean, when we first started this podcast, I felt you were at your peak. That week you told me you'd hit your best, like, power numbers and,
just crushing. No, I'm still training really hard.
Yeah.
It's now kind of the goal is like get good stimulus, like, because I'm obviously not getting the races.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get that fatigue built up so that I can go into I can actually take a normal off season and kind of start from a similar point. And also it's, you know, I'm working with a new coach, so I can refine some refine things so that next year he and I are on the same page as far as what I need. So, yeah. And that's, you know, I like training, so it's not too much work. It was like once the last race got canceled, I'll be honest, like I had a little bit of like a funk that I went into for like about a week or so. But yeah, now it's just like kind of
switch gears.
Preparing. Yeah. Just like focus on nailing the workouts and
yeah,
enjoying it and having a good time. The weather's great. So, you know, just go ride your bike. There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's not too hard. If you get to ride your bike and then you're having a pretty good day.
Yeah. Honestly, that's awesome, man. That's way awesome. And, yeah, just follow Tyler at his social media on Instagram. And, definitely if you want to keep update with his Strava and his training that he was talking about, go follow him on Strava. It's definitely always, I mean, it's like doing 4.5 hour days every day.
Yeah, I try, you know.
Pushing it.
Nothing, no Sep Kuss training, but I do my best.
Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, well, yeah, for me, and imaginary collective, same boat as Tyler. I mean, all races have basically been canceled. It maybe looks like the Iceman in Michigan.
It might
happen. I was talking to the promoter, and if that happens, that will be there.
I might even have to go.
Yeah,
and one of our first guests would be very happy about that.
Alexi's
heart very happy.
So I got a great text. I was messaging Tyler the other day, getting ready for the podcast, and he was noticing that I was, you know, doing Zwift again and starting to dabble in some of those races. And we were texting back and forth, and you know, he was like, "Oh, I'd love to see you be competitive at one of these events." And I was like, "Challenge accepted." So definitely, if we're gonna all three of us be at the Iceman, it's gonna be game on, man.
Yeah.
I can't wait, man. That's like really honestly motivated me. I've gotten back to just feeling good again. I've loved, you know, getting on that Zwift and yeah, doing those races, because it just helps you kind of distract yourself while doing those efforts. And I mean, I guess when you're that high end athlete, you just almost, you forget how addicted you are to that.
It's fun to feel good on your bike.
Yeah, exactly. And once you're back, once you're kind of back, taste that again, you're like, oh man. And Yeah, so that's definitely, I'm excited for the Iceman. I really hope we can all, you know, get along and solve everything, solve Corona, and just hold hands and love each other, and then we can all race bikes at Iceman. I think that would be so cool. So that would be the next kind of goal and challenge right now for us at Imaginary Collective and myself. So I'm pretty motivated for that. So yeah. Thanks, Tyler, for motivating
me. This winter we'll have to set up some the next stage Zwift rides.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. We'll work on doing that. That could be cool. That could be way cool. So
yeah,
awesome.
So, anyway,
sweet, all right, dude. Well, thanks again for another great week, man. I'll talk to you later. Huh? Hope everyone enjoyed this podcast, and you know, go give us, if you're listening, go give us a great review and write some comments, or you know, hit us up on social media on Instagram at the next stage 2 and send us some messages. And we've been loving it, especially again this week. You're learning something new every week, so it's super exciting. And thanks everyone for the love. So
yeah,
have a good one.
Have a good week.
Ciao. Bye.